Live from East River 9 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is a beautiful day here at East River 9 Golf Course, Hirsch Road in Edo. We have an amazing view of the Houston skyline. It's a great course. It's a great driving range. They have terrific food, drinks. Joel Blank, Patrick Creighton, in for Jeremy Branham, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5. We get to have a great night, great day and hang out here and talk sports with you. And Joel, before we hit the break, I wanted to lay out for you exactly what I want to get your thoughts on. When it came to Justin Verlander, because we know how Jim Crane treats basically every player and everything. He's very conservative with the amount of years, the amount of money. He tries to be very fine with the pencil. Is Justin Verlander the unicorn in this situation? Is he the guy Jim Crane will throw out everything out the window just because it happens to be Justin Verlander?
Well, he has been, and I think that that's where he's got to be careful, because every owner has his darlings. Like, when I worked for the Rockets, Clyde Drexler was that guy for Les Alexander. Clyde Drexler, even as it translated from his playing career to his TV career, it was dictated by Les Alexander. Everything else I was in charge of, but when it came to that contract and those kind of details, Les was going to handle that one, because that was his guy. And I think that JV, in a lot of the same ways, is Jim Crane's guy. They're golf buddies. I said this last time when JV was looking for a new team or possibly staying with his old team. I said, this isn't going to even involve Click. This is going to be where they're going to be on the golf course, or, you know, they're just going to chat over beer or wine, and Crane's going to figure it out if he wants them and what price, and they're going to do the deal. Even his brother, when he came on our show, we basically joked about it, but weren't kidding in the fact that this is going to be those two guys and nobody else. I know that, you know, Click likes having Verlander around. It just depends at what price. The one thing where he can't compromise the rest of this roster is overpaying Justin Verlander just to keep his friend around. We have to remember the key statistics, not just that he's coming off Tommy John. The man's about to be 40 years old. The man didn't have his best stuff in the playoffs when it matters most. Is he going to win the Cy Young? Yes. How many years does he have left in the tank? When the wheels fall off, do they fall off slowly and the tires wear out? Or do they all come off at the same time? And does he capsize? We don't know those things. The answers are still yet to be determined. But that has to be involved in what you determine the price is going to be to bring him back, if that's what your owner wants you to do. And I think it's going to be a real hard call for whoever the general manager is, in having to have the realization that it might not be realistic from an analytical general manager standpoint to pay him what Jim Crane may inevitably want to pay Justin Verlander.
I'm not trying to... Okay, yes, I'm probably going to try to scare people here. When it comes to paying Justin Verlander, there has to be a decision of... If Jim Crane is going to pay Justin Verlander whatever it takes because he wants Justin Verlander to retire an Astro, that part of the budget has to be separate from the rest of the team. You cannot hold back the team.
He's got to be willing to pay the tax.
Because you want to pay Justin Verlander $45 million so that he can make just a little bit more money than Max Scherzer. Now, Verlander is going to be 40 years old. He's coming off a season where between the regular season and the postseason, he threw 195 innings. Most pitchers coming back from Tommy John surgery are capped at 160 innings. Historically, guys who throw over that, and there have been very few, have a lot of arm problems. Matt Harvey is the poster boy for guys having arm problems after being worked too hard following Tommy John surgery. Matt Harvey threw 215 innings, regular season and postseason, coming back from Tommy John surgery in 2015. He posted a 2.71 ERA in 2015. He never had another ERA under 4.86 the rest of his career. His arm fell off.
I mean, the Dark Knight was obviously doing a lot of things during the Dark Knight, too, where he wasn't taking primo care of himself either. But you're right. Look, from the standpoint of that, we have to take into consideration Justin Verlander's a freak of nature. He wasn't supposed to be able to do what he did last year. He wasn't supposed to be able to do before Tommy John surgery what he did the majority of his career, which was he threw harder later in games when he threw more pitches, when most guys are grasping for breath trying to find a way to find the strike zone. He has an unbelievable, ridiculous ability to have an arm that can do things that most any other pitcher cannot do. But how long can he continue to do that? To your point, coming off surgery to do what he did just this last season alone, and maybe you saw the remnant of that. Maybe you saw in the playoffs the reason why he struggled more and wasn't as dominant and effective as he had been, because maybe that was just too many innings in the regular season, no matter how much he dictated versus the organization dictating when he pitches and how many pitches he throws. Maybe it finally caught up to him.
And here's, you know, more of that. How does a guy who did not have any mechanical issues the entire regular season suddenly start having a bunch of mechanical issues in the postseason? Joel, you were a pitcher. Mm-hmm. When you pitch, you're repeating the exact same mechanics over and over again. Usually the reason guys stop repeating that motion is because they're compensating for
discomfort,
a pain,
yep,
an injury, a fatigue. So that's why I said, you know, I would not be surprised if eventually we find out Verlander's arm was fatigued. Verlander's calf was still bothering him. There was something else that was bothering Verlander. Because for him to all of the sudden have mechanical issues, that doesn't make any sense. Now, further point, again, he's coming off of Tommy John surgery and throwing all these innings. Roger Clemens, right? Roger, now I know Roger is listed as 6'4 and 205, but if you watched Roger in Houston, Roger was closer to 235 than he was 205. And that's not saying he was fat.
Nope.
He was a bull. Justin Verlander, 6'5 and 230 pounds. These are big guys. But Roger Clemens never had that type of arm injury late in his career. And in 2005, at age 42, he posted a 187 ERA, somehow did not win another Cy Young, and led the league in strikeouts and threw 211 innings. Well, he only threw two half seasons again afterwards. If you pay Justin Verlander a three-year deal at $40 to $45 million a year, there is no way you can realistically expect he is going to replicate the season that he had this year, where he was essentially 2 years off, highly motivated to show that he could get back. I feel like you're going to be paying for some half seasons.
Yeah, that's a big risk too, right? That's why, again, not only are they not willing to go long-term big money for guys in their prime, it makes zero sense to go lots of years and big money for a guy that's been through and has the mileage that he has. It's almost like a Dusty Baker situation if JV would be in for it, but you know some team's going to throw silly dollars for multiple years at him, where you could go a year to year or do another deal where you do a two-year. He opts out of this one, you give him another two-year if you want to put the options in, put him in. But so therefore you can manage it both ways so you don't get caught with your pants down with a whole lot of money in the pockets. That's what you have to be very, very very, very hypersensitive to if you're the organization, because we've seen how these older guys can hold the team hostage by a contract where the return on the investment is zero. Pujols and you know, guys, position players like Pujols and Miggy in Detroit, those are guys that, you know, they're never going to live up to the back end of those deals, but you had to give them those kind of deals to get them. You're not in that same situation, and you're in a position of luxury with your pitching staff. You saw that with the emergence of Christian Javier to go along with Fromber and all the young starters that you could put around him, that if he walks, it's not the end of the world.
The Mets are paying Max Scherzer $43 million a year. Scherzer spent, what, two trips on the IL this year? Mm-hmm. And in the postseason, looked spent.
He did.
They were paying Jacob DeGrom $33.5 million. And DeGrom was due to make $30.5 million next year, $32.5 million the following year. DeGrom opted out. DeGrom's going to be 35. Mm-hmm. He missed 4 months of the season, and when he came back, sometimes he looked like DeGrom, and well, sometimes he didn't. When I say I wouldn't pay Justin Verlander $45 million a year, I am not picking on Justin Verlander. I wouldn't pay Jacob DeGrom $40 million a year either, and I love DeGrom.
You know the Mets better than anybody, but here's the thing. you had an owner that's so desperate to win that he grossly overpaid, because the difference between him and the second highest pitcher in baseball is, I think, like $7 million. So that's why I'm with you. Look, regardless of where he is in his career, but especially because of where he's in his career and who you have in your starting rotation and waiting in the wings to be in your rotation, I said yesterday, I'm not going over $35 million a year. I think that's a raise that's very, very valid and worthy for what he did winning the Cy Young and doing all he did in a year's time. But I don't think that that sets him up to get the kind of Scherzer money and say it's worth it for the team. It's something we're desperate and we have to do, like the ownership. The ownership going up trying to match the Yankees is one thing. The ownership trying to get a championship and buy one is another. He's going to overspend yet again this year. I don't think because he overspends, it behooves Jim Crane to say, I want to overspend. I have to overspend to get my friend.
If we take the emotion out of it, all right, let's take the whole affinity for Justin Verlander out of the equation. This is pitcher A. That age, 40 years old, Tommy John surgery, the workload that he just had, the workload of his career, every historical metric since the dawn of time in baseball says he is heading for regression, and he is heading for regression hard. Maybe that's next year. Maybe it's the following year. But he is heading for regression hard. And if even a three-year deal, they're going to regret. Like you were saying, if it's a three-year deal, but there's team option, or let's call it a mutual option, right? He can opt in, they can opt in. After each year, there's a mutual option. They can opt in or opt out. And then after that, we'll re-up you and we'll give you another. So let's say we pay you $35 million next year, and then you can opt out. We'll pay you $40 million next year, and then you can opt out. You do not want to get caught holding the bag on this long term. And because you have six very capable, and with the exception of Lance McCullers, extremely cheap. Mm-hmm. Even Lance McCullers is cheap overall. You've got six starters. You can continue to go with your six-man rotation and have a whole bunch of guys who are under team control.
Pat, he's supposed to be an ace. Your ace in the playoffs is supposed to get the ball whenever he wants it and whenever you can possibly get him in there. There were fans clamoring all through the playoffs, and there were actually baseball minds wondering how many times they were going to give JV the ball in the playoffs because he didn't look like himself.
Look, that's he's not Schilling.
That's not why you take an ace and pay him all ungodly amounts of money.
He's not Curt Schilling. He's not Randy Johnson. He's not that guy who, give me the ball, demanding the baseball, is going to go out there and mow guys down. It doesn't matter. Game one, game four, game seven, he's going to take the ball and he's going to mow guys down. He's not that guy. I don't know why. I can't explain it. Nobody can explain it. But for $40 million, you better take me to the promised land.
And be the guy that's leading the bus.
He was a bus rider.
Yes.
He was a bus rider. Framber Valdez was driving the bus.
And
Christian Javier was driving the bus.
Was playing co-pilot.
Ryan Pressly was driving the bus. Jeremy Peña and Yuli Gurriel, they were driving the bus.
Brian Abreu.
Jordan and Abreu, they were driving the bus. JV was not driving the bus.
Nope. He wasn't even in the first half of the bus.
And considering you're talking about $40 million, how many other things, how many other holes can you fill with $40 million? The Astros won a world championship with $195 million payroll. The Phillies were $260 million. They had $195 million payroll. That means they made a lot more money this time than they made in 2017. So where does that bring you to next year? If instead of paying $40 million for a redundant position, because I've already got, that would be seven starters, I have the most depth in baseball, I can take that $40 million. I can get a first baseman and an outfielder.
And maybe more.
I am somewhat concerned over the idea of how long a deal, and does that deal then impact their willingness to spend in positions of need? Speaking of positions of need, one of those positions is the outfield. We saw how much it hurt when Michael Brantley went down. And, you know, the move for Trey Mancini didn't work out the way that they wanted it to. And Aledmys Diaz, as usual, got hurt and then was ineffective afterwards. And that, you know, whether it was left field or DH, wherever you weren't playing Yordan, that was a dent in the lineup. How do they address that dent? Well, here's going to give you a handful of guys who could potentially fill that dent next.
Live from East River 9 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton for Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, live from East River 9 on Hirsch Road on the east side. Great, great view. Man, this is – and you got a nice cool breeze coming through here. BMAC is very much enjoying a large cheeseburger and fries. I had one earlier. It was tremendous. So do enjoy all of that.
You know what? Here's one other thing on the Verlander thing just before we get off the topic, and that is that Jay Bean wants to win. JB wants to win because JB has a lot of personal goals that he still wants to attain, and that's the 300 wins, the 4,000 strikeouts. The wins in particular have to be gotten by a team that wins. So he needs, no matter how well he pitches or sometimes when he doesn't, he needs the support of a runs and a lineup that can get him Ws because he's got to average about 14 wins for the next four seasons to try and get to 300. That means that if you are the Tigers for the reunion tour, you are, Todd the Show said, Miami Marlins. If your team's like that, that's not what he wants right now. I mean, sure, the lifestyle would be great, but to get him where he needs to go to be possibly the last pitcher that we see in our lifetime get to 300 wins, that's not going to happen with a bad team. So that's going to factor into wherever he goes.
It has to. And you know, he wants 300 wins. He's, what, 56 away?
I thought he had like 249, I mean, something like that, towards the end of the season. So that's why I said he needs to average about 14, 15 wins a season for the next four seasons.
So and look, if he's still on the Astros next year, very high probability he's probably going to win 16 games.
That's right.
So it certainly is in his best interest to stay with a team like the Astros. And
well, Pat, schedule matters too. If you're pitching against the A's and you know the Rangers and some of those teams, those are a lot easier to pick up W's on too than some of the teams if you're going to the AL East or some of the teams if you're going to the NL West.
And look at it from this point of view, right? The Mariners, they're going to spend money in the offseason. But if you're Verlander, do you want to go pitch in Seattle? Probably not.
Right.
The Arlington Junk Grabbers, they're going to spend money this offseason. Do you want to go be the only guy on that team who can pitch? Probably not. I mean, they can hit. They can't
young
pitch.
Pitchers. Yeah, but he's not the kind of guy that's going to mold young pitchers and work with them
on
a daily basis.
He's about
that's
him.
That's not who he is. That's right.
Is he going to go to the San Francisco Giants, who are going to spend money like drunken sailors this offseason? If they're going to go out and they're going to spend money for Aaron Judge, they're going to spend money for Carlos Correa, and then they're willing to continue to spend money for Justin Verlander, maybe, but that's a tough division. You got to go face the Dodgers.
By the way, I love Drift Bar. I just did passing. I just wanted to mention that. Zach, the owner, just walked by. This is why you mentioned the Rangers, but the thing is, you bought the same player twice a year ago, you know, and you made one of them play second base. You got Marcus Semien, you got Corey Seager. You spent a boatload on both guys. They don't seem to figure out how to spend money the right way. That's what you want to avoid. That's why you've got to try, and it's tough because he's the owner. He can do whatever he wants. He's Jim Crane, but you've got to have someone that at least he respects in his ear to say, Jim, I know you want your guy back. You got to do it within reason because you can't overspend and jeopardize the rest of this team. It's too good with the chance to be good for a very long time.
Knowing that the Mets are going to blow through $300 million like Swiss cheese, knowing that the Dodgers are probably right behind them, the Yankees, the Phillies, the Padres, the Giants, there are going to be a lot of teams whose payrolls are going to be north of $260 million next year. The Astros were at $195 million this year. Is this the part where Jim Crane says, I'll be willing to pay the tax as long as I'm in the first bucket of tax. As long as you're within $20 million of the tax, you're in the low bucket. When you go $20 million over the tax, then you go into the next penalty bucket. You go another $20 million, you go into the Stevie Cohen penalty bucket. Is he willing to say go to what the tax is, what, $233 million? So is he willing to go to $253 million if he's going to pay $40 million for Justin Verlander because, wow, winning makes us so much money?
Yeah, no, look, I think that he's not willing. I don't think he's shown signs. Look, he can have 14 ring nights again next year. so he can up the games that you play the A's to where you're going to get 25,000 because everybody wants the rings. So there's ways that they know, and they're smart marketing people, that they can make more money capitalizing on the championship they just won so that they have a lot more money in the bank. But that doesn't mean that because of that, that it's going to preclude Crane from saying, look, I don't want to spend more than I have to. The problem is that his emotions are into it because he likes his buddy a lot. And I think that the best move that this team could make is to go to Verlander and say, hey, you know what? Very much in a friendly fashion, what are you looking for? This is where we are. This is where you are. Can we do this or can't we? Because I think at the end of the day, you have other needs to fill that could make this team even better across the board on a game-by-game basis instead of just worrying a guy that pitches every 5 or 6 days. And the fact that you have enough starting pitching to get you by whatever he could possibly do for you for the next year or two. And you could be just fine. He could be just fine with some other team that's going to throw money at him where he might still be able to win.
I know people have brought up the idea of, if you don't sign Verlander, will the Yankees throw a boatload of money at him? Well, if the Yankees are going to sign Aaron Judge, if we go by Hal Steinbrenner at his word, which is he is not going to go over $300 million. They're not going to blow the payroll straight to the moon. He is not his father. If we go with that idea of, all right, look, if they're going to pay $40 million a year for Aaron Judge, are they going to pay $40 million a year for Justin Verlander? They're already paying Gerrit Cole $30-plus million. They're paying Giancarlo Stanton $30 million. How many $30 million yeah. guys can you have on your team? So I don't think the Yankees can go and get Justin Verlander unless they sacrifice Aaron Judge. And if they give up Aaron Judge, they're an 86-win team.
Yeah, no doubt. It's like, how do you fill the rest of the holes? You're already leaking water. And if you're throwing, you know, you're so top-heavy with big-time contracts, and you're going to make Justin Verlander shave, I think there's lots of ramifications that you have to consider in the fact that you're right. I don't think it's going to make them a better ball club. But, I like it if that's the way they want to try it. Go for it then. But that's why I said, I think that we're, in my mind, I would be thinking we're closer to parting of the ways than we are to finding a way to make this happen. If Justin Verlander was Tom Brady and said, I just want to keep winning because 300 is the most important thing, I'll play for another year at 25 or 30, and then we'll work it out from there. Use the rest of the money to go get the kind of guys that can continuously make us a World Series favorite. That'd be awesome. But it doesn't seem like he's even considering that at this point.
No, and is that not what makes Tom Brady Tom Brady? Is
part of being the GOAT.
He never needed to be the highest paid guy. He didn't care because he was going to win. And with all the endorsements that he gets because all he does is win, he more than made up the difference in the salaries. If you're Justin Verlander, if you're Jim Crane, you just all right, look, Justin, what does it take you to really stay here instead of $25 million? Is $30 million enough? Is $33 million enough? You know, does it have to be $45 million? Is it more important to get $40 million or is it more important to get 300 wins? That's a legitimate hard conversation, as you
no
said,
question.
That they have to have. Because I think once you cross $35 million, you're getting into some dangerous territory, especially if we're talking about we're going to do a three-year deal at $105 million and there's no way for the team to get out of it.
Yeah, no, you're right. Those are hard conversations that have to be had sooner rather than later because you've got to get a lot of clarity as free agency opens today because you got to know what your parameters are and how much money you can spend because we all know that there are still ways you can make this team better and teams that, look, if Verlander walks and you could add a Josh Bell and you can add a bat in the outfield and you could add possibly something else at catcher or somewhere else, you could actually make yourself a much better team than Verlander every 6 day pitching, especially when you run the risk of him pitching like he pitched in the playoffs.
And if we're going to be fair, right, and say, okay, well, what is the drop from Justin Verlander to, even if they went to a five-man rotation, what is the drop from Justin Verlander, the guy who would ultimately replace him, is that guy ultimately Christian Javier?
Yes, it is.
Because Christian Javier pitched like a damn boss.
Yep.
And to think, because this was a conversation, we'll have this conversation at 2 o'clock regarding Jake Odorizzi, who got traded by the Braves to the Arlington Junk Grabbers, and they're picking up $10 million of the $12.5 million salary on Odorizzi. But if you remember, back in 2021, Jake Odorizzi signed very late in the spring. It happened after Fromber broke his finger, and for whatever reason, the Astros decided they needed to rush Jake Odorizzi, who had only been with the team for 2 weeks. They needed to rush him into the rotation. He wasn't ready. He gets bombed, and then he gets hurt. And the actual reason for that was they didn't trust Christian Javier yet to be a starting pitcher. That's why they felt the need to rush him. And it wound up being to everybody's detriment. So there are decisions that have to be made. And look, Christian Javier has proven that guy can pitch his you-know-what off. So he threw two no-hitters essentially this year in Yankee Stadium and at Citizens Bank Park, two of the like most awful places to play as a visiting player. He went in and said, you can't touch this. How many guys in the league can even have that attitude of, I'm going to go into, you know, extremely hostile territory, and you guys can't hit a dang thing I throw. Christian Javier is a guy who should be getting the ball every fifth day. And if you add in Hunter Brown, every sixth day. Because you know what? Hunter Brown, a guy that I told you, contrary to a particular national media guy, Hunter Brown was going to be a boss. Hunter Brown was going to be a starting pitcher. Hunter Brown was named Pacific Coast League Pitcher of the Year. He didn't finish the year there.
All year, that's what he was going to get. That's who he was. That's how what he could do, and I give you full credit for that.
So, you know, Hunter Brown's going to come up and pitch, and you could stay with that six-man rotation. That way you're not overly taxing the arms of Jose Urquidy, of Luis García, of Christian Javier, and of Hunter Brown. Nobody else has that luxury. Nobody has the depth that the Astros have. They can go with the six-man. Other teams are trying to figure out who the heck's going to be our four.
Yeah.
They've got six, and that's without Justin Verlander. You mentioned, what do you do with that money? If instead of paying that money to Justin Verlander, what else could I do with it? Well, there's a handful of there's a handful of outfielders that might be intriguing to you. I'm going to throw some at you next.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East River 9. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Alongside Joel Blank, I'm Patrick Creighton, in for Jeremy Branham, live from East River 9 Golf Course in Edo. Great course, great food, amazing view of the city. Got to give some props and shout-outs to my man Brian McDonald, our engineer here on site. Brendan Riley, our producer, back in the studio. Both those guys doing a great job keeping everything rolling for us, for Joel and I here from the golf course. It's a beautiful day.
It's a par three, Pat. We got to make sure we point that out, because I think some people were under the misconception that it's like a full 18 holes. It's perfect for business golf, right? It's nine holes. You can play it a little over an hour. It's all par threes. There's a driving range, so you can also hit balls and hit your full complement of clubs on a full-size driving range. It's a fantastic facility. Like you said, beautiful views of the skyline. This place is going to continue to just get better and better, and it's going to grow.
So, like I said, this is exactly my speed golf-type place. It's not a full course.
Right.
There's not par fives. I'm not going to lose 50 golf balls here today. This is the kind of place, like you said, it's business golf.
Yeah.
You can come here, you can talk, you can hold a beer in one hand and like on every hole, and this is a great golf course with great social atmosphere as well. Talking about how the Astros fill in some of their the holes on the team, and outfield being one of them. Once Michael Brantley went down, they really struggled to fill his role, not just you know, as the left field DH combo to Yordan Alvarez, but they really struggled to fill his spot in the lineup. And outfield is going to be something that's got to be on the radar for the Houston Astros. And I went and pulled who I think are probably the best free agent outfielders that you might consider as far as would you go for it. Now, the first one, of course, is obligatory. I have to mention this person. He will cost probably as much as Justin Verlander. And there is the issue of he played for the Evil Empire, and he said some non-flattering things about Jose Altuve, and he went the whole, we're the Yankees, we never do anything wrong, don't pay attention to that Joe Girardi video, don't read this letter. But Aaron Judge is coming off an absolutely insane season. And to do that as a right-handed hitter in Yankee Stadium, where the power alley in right center field, left center field, I think is 394. So there are no cheapies in the power alley at Yankee Stadium for a right-handed batter. You know, the lefties are the ones who get the cheapies at Yankee Stadium. Aaron Judge, now look, Aaron Judge has the power to put it out anywhere, anytime.
Is it realistic, though? I mean, is it realistic to even think that there's a chance that they're going to go get him or be in any conversations?
Well, look, somebody is going to give him buku dollars. Mm-hmm. The San Francisco Giants are on record. They will not be outbid for Aaron Judge. But he is the best outfielder on the market. We do have to at least address that he is in the room. And could you imagine the idea of Altuve, Judge, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, in one lineup? That's kind of like playing on God mode.
I mean, I mentioned this to Jeremy the other day, that finally with the second championship, the way they're getting a lot of credit for the way they were constructed, the way they stayed together, the way they played as a team this year, I think it's going to be a destination city. Where guys in the past were a little apprehensive about, yeah, do I want all the outside stuff, the fans yelling at me when I wasn't a part of it, the scrutiny because I play for a team that has an asterisk in some people's minds. If I have two offers and one is having to deal with that and the other is I don't, more chances than not in the past, guys were saying, I'll take the one where I don't. Now, because of the consistent winning and the way that they've gone about the business of winning a second World Series and the fact that they're getting their props from all the baseball types that say, hey, that was then, this is now, they just got a winning culture that never stopped, and they've got a great system, and they've got a great bunch of young players that says it's going to keep going on. Where you get the Kevin Durant to Golden State mentality of, you could get some big names that say, I want to go play with them too. If I can't beat them, I'll join them.
And look, the plus side to Aaron Judge is, A, he's a giant. He is an excellent right fielder, which means he would be an excellent left fielder. He showed he can be a solid center fielder, that if you needed him to play center field, he can. He does not go fish on bad pitches. He was in the top 20% of lowest chase rate. But he is 31. Historically, guys who are his size don't age well, although I don't think there has ever been a guy his size who is the athlete that he is.
The Yankees can't afford to lose him, but if they do, the Giants are a team that needs him because they're trying to keep up with the Joneses. The Padres have sold out everything for the here and now, and they're getting Tatis Jr. back, trying to find a spot for him because they've already overspent trying to compete with the Dodgers. The Dodgers, the best record in baseball, that consistently fall short in the playoffs, are going to be, they got to re-sign Trey Turner. They've got Justin Turner that they've got to worry about. They've got issues they've got to deal with too. But the Giants, who normally rival those two teams, have not done that. And in recent years, they have fallen short. In order to do that again, it's going to take a couple of big names that bring them back into the spotlight instead of falling off, at their after limelight. I think that Judge and Rizzo would be two guys they could look at to try and put themselves back in the conversation.
Look, I don't think that they're even going to be involved in the Aaron Judge conversation. But like I said, I have to address him because he's the best player in the free agent market. This next guy, I think, is somebody who would really fit well here, and that's Brandon Nimmo. Nimmo is a very underrated player. He is a good average, high on base player. He's got excellent gap power. He'll hit you some home runs. He is probably a little better than average defensively. He can play center field. He can play left field. He's a guy who's shown he can hit left-handed pitching because the first 4 years of his career, the Mets did not play him against left-handed pitching. And over the last 2 years, he has shown against lefties, he's got an OPS of 800. So he can hit left-handed pitching. He's at an 824 OPS for his career. He is a very productive player when he's on the field. The problem is when he's on the field. Now, earlier in his career, he platooned a lot, so he didn't play full seasons because they had him in a platoon. But there was this year, he played 150 games this year. The year before, he missed time with a hamstring injury. So you don't want to – I think you have to allocate that – there's a chance he's going to miss 30 to 40 games a year for whatever injury. Kind of the same way you would Carlos Correa. He's going to take a fastball off the hand.
Again, I wasn't a fan of it and didn't think it would work, and it did with load management in baseball the way Dusty and crew have managed their – I think he will get enough days off where you can minimize his chances for injury. I mean, look, Aledmys Diaz is injury-prone, but they found a way to maximize him. Obviously, Nimmo's a guy that's going to play more and is worth a ton more, but I think they can give him enough days off where you can try and minimize the risk for injury.
Here's the other thing I like about Nimmo. Because he can play left, because he can play center, you can have like a three-man weave with him, Chaz McCormick, and Yordan Alvarez. We've heard the Astros say they want Yordan, they expect Yordan is going to play more in left field. That means, well, Nimmo can DH those days. He's also, because of his very high on base, he's a guy who can lead off. He's led off for the Mets. His on base is usually a 385, a high on base guy. That allows you to get Altuve out of the leadoff spot where he doesn't want to be and push the lineup down.
I know he doesn't want to be there.
Because that's been reported. That's not new. Altuve,
I mean, with the season he had, and he ended up with 30 bombs, 300 average, the fact that he was, you know, hitting the leadoff home runs, which is a big deal, and competing with some of the best to ever do it in the leadoff spot, he was obviously the best leadoff hitter that the roster had, but I don't think anything should say he should get out of that leadoff position.
Well, if he doesn't want to be the leadoff
guy, something you got to address.
You know, and the fact that when you have a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs, ideally you'd like him to come up with men on base, that you could move Altuve down to the two hole. And now you push the whole lineup down, so you'd be Nimmo, Altuve, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker. And now you push the lineup down one more with a high on base guy. Nimmo can DH when Yordan plays the field. Nimmo can play left field when Yordan DHs. When Chaz needs a day off, Nimmo can play center. So it gives you a lot of flexibility.
It's the versatility that you've had with a lot of players on your roster. It's just a bigger name and more money. It is Aledmys Diaz. It is the Dubons. It is the Marwin Gonzalez previous to those two guys. It's the guys that you can move all around the diamond that can do the jack-of-all-trades, but do a majority of those trades while hitting the baseball very well.
So I think he's a guy that fits very well into what the Astros would want to do. This is a guy who I think is a very interesting and possibly cheaper option than Nimmo, and that's Andrew Benintendi. Benintendi is coming off a very strange season because he hit for a very high average and he had a high on base and he hit 5 homers. Now, he hit 17 homers just a year ago, but in 2021, he only hit 5 home runs last year, and he seemed to be willing to settle to go the other way with pitches, you know, make soft contact. Now, maybe it was about beating shifts, right? Maybe he's going the other way and sacrificing power to get on base. But he didn't steal bases either. He only stole 8 bases. Now, with the new rules, maybe that changes because, A, no more shift, and, B, you can only try to pick me off twice before it's a balk. So maybe that gives him more ability to drive baseballs, more opportunities to steal. But he did hit 304 with a 373 on base. He is strictly a left fielder at this point. He cannot play center field anymore. And you might even think, it's probably fair to say, Yordan might be a better left fielder than Benintendi at this point. He certainly has a better arm. But he would be a relatively lesser expensive option than Brandon Nimmo that you could do the left field DH swap with Yordan with. A guy who is in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not very interested in Benintendi. Like you said, it's limited with versatility. He's coming off injury. I mean, he is who he is. I don't expect power from him. I don't expect, you know, a lot of things from him. He's a good outfielder. But for me, I think the money could be used better spent elsewhere. And I'm not big on him. And like I said, the injury as much as anything else, I don't know that he's got, you know, where he thinks he's at in his career. I think we may have seen the best of Andrew Benintendi. So I wouldn't push for that one.
There's two more guys whose names I want to bring up with you. We'll get to them on the other side. Killer Bees.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East River 9. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Joel, so we talked a couple of outfielders. We talked about Aaron Judge. We talked about Brandon Nimmo. We talked about Andrew Benintendi. This is a guy that the Astros were linked to very briefly at the very end of August. Nothing ultimately happened, but Michael Conforto is a guy who's coming off of shoulder surgery. He did not play this past year. He is a guy who hits for a decent average, good on base, very good OPS numbers, hit a career high 33 homers in 2019. He obliterated baseballs in the COVID season at 927 OPS. He is a capable defender in both left and right, although he's better in left. He's a left-handed hitter, so left-handed power, which now that there is no more shift, having that balance in the lineup, I think, is going to be more important because now that you can no longer just shift three guys and have your second baseman play short right field and tell your right-handed pitcher, just pound inside, pound inside, pound inside. Now guys have to go back to learning how to pitch and how to throw outside and get soft contact, try to induce guys to try to pull balls that are out off the plate. Having that lefty-righty interchangeable lineup, it's going to be a tougher matchup for teams to come in.
There's
with their
no
bullpen.
Reason to believe this team isn't going to be better offensively next year, even if they stand pat, simply because of the fact that Tucker and Alvarez were two of the guys damaged the most by the shift, and they're going to benefit the most going into next season. The fact that they have two guys now that don't have to be home run or bust or strike out, that can continue to do what Yordan and Tucker both do, which is hit solid clothesline line drives and not have to worry about, you know, four guys congregating all over on that side. I think the Astros, there's every reason to believe their offense is going to be better just for that fact alone.
So Conforto is a guy who, look, he's a 30-home run guy. He's a pretty good outfielder. He's going to probably wind up on a one-year prove-it type deal because he didn't play this past year. Another guy that you could interchange with Yordan, I mean, left field and DH. When Kyle Tucker is going to get a day off, Conforto can play right field capably. What are your thoughts on Michael Conforto?
I like him. I know you're right. The team was linked to him. They were evidently kicking the tires and keeping a close eye on him. So were other teams that at the end of the day, he just didn't end up playing. But I think that's a guy, especially because of the fact when you're trying to figure out what you're going to do with Verlander, when you're trying to figure out how many apples you can go in how many different directions to help get this team better. If you can get him on a prove it for a year, then basically if Michael Brantley only gives you one more year or you see what he gives you or whatever you're going to do, you know, otherwise, I think that it puts you in the position to say, hey, we'll take care of you if you take care of us. If you play a full season and you do the things you're capable of doing and you know, you fit right into our culture and our locker room, then long term, after that year, we can look at making sure you are another one of our fixture pieces on this roster, because I think he's a good piece. And I think that he's a good piece for not just short term, but I think he can be a piece for multiple years and be a really good member of the Houston Astros. I like them looking at him.
And his one-year prove-it type deal is right in line with their we want value contract type mentality. And, you know, for a guy like Conforto, who is, I want to say, 30 years old. So you're talking about a guy who's still more or less in his prime.
Right.
That you're going to get on a cheaper deal. And then you can kind of decide, all right, how did this guy play for us? Did he show up? Is he showing the shoulder is healthy? Was he productive? How long do we want to roll with him? Now, there are guys who are on the market that if you look at different lists on different sites, you'll see guys like Jerickson Profar. Now, yes. Profar is a guy who once upon a time was the number one prospect
in
baseball.
I don't want him.
He's now an outfielder. He's a terrible defensive outfielder.
Yes, he is.
He hit .243 this year, and it's the best season he's ever had. I don't know why he's showing up on lists as a top 20 free agent.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
I would not pay Joey Gallo a dollar.
No, thank you.
Do you realize Joey Gallo's career batting average now is .199?
You talk about boom or bust as it's defined in Webster's. It's Joey Gallo. I mean, and I want no part of that either. You've got enough in this lineup. You don't need a guy that's going to, you know, swing and miss as much as he swings for the fences. I'll pass. No,
he is the only guy in Major League history to have over 100 career homers and a career batting average under .200.
I mean, he's a good defensive outfielder, too. He's got a gun. But no, thank you. You don't need that in your lineup.
That is why the guy that I have at number 5 on this list is somebody we all know very well. It's Uncle Mike.
Uncle Mike, for a lot of reasons, Patrick, that everybody knows and more when we hear about the locker room speech that happened during the playoff run, when the fact that he's made it very known that he likes it here, he likes it in Houston, his family likes it in Houston, and unlike James Click, when he says that, it matters. I think, especially to a guy like Jim Crane, I think that Uncle Mike, if the price is right, and there's no reason to believe he's not going to give you somewhat of a hometown discount. I had seen ESPN guess it's going to be in the $14 million range on the open market. I could see him doing 2-22, 2-24. That's just fine. I think at that price, to get a guy like that, that knows Houston, knows the lineup, knows left field, knows he doesn't have to hit home runs in this lineup. He just has to be that 300 hitter that hits the gaps, hits the power alleys, gets you the doubles, comes up big when he needs when you need him. I think Uncle Mike's the perfect fix.
Here, look, I love Brantley's bat. These are my concerns about Michael Brantley. He's coming off shoulder surgery. It's the third time he's had surgery on that shoulder. The first time he had surgery on the shoulder, he had to have a second one after 11 games. Brantley has had a bunch of ankle injuries over the last couple of years. He first hurt his ankle in 2017, and it cost him half a season. He's had repeated ankle injuries. Coming now at age 36, he looks more like a DH than an outfielder.
He doesn't have to be anything but a DH in this lineup. Occasionally he can play left field, but if it's true that they want Yordan to be a more significant player in the outfield, well, that's perfect. Just change roles, and you're just fine.
So it's – look, if the price is going to be right and I can get Brantley for a year, I think I would be interested in the idea of Brantley for a year. I don't think he'd be my number one option because I'd much rather have Nim or Conforto. But I also understand those are going to be more expensive options. Mm-hmm. And if, however the Astros budget decides to shake out, $25 million for an outfielder is not in the budget, I think Brantley then becomes the number one option.
Are you more likely or more willing to risk it on a Conforto and coming off an injury? Or are you more willing to risk it on a Brantley coming off an injury?
I'm probably more willing to risk it on Conforto because he can play the field. And he can play both corners, and I know the power is real. And to have a left-hander, like I said, and that's kind of what Brantley, I mean, that left-hander, that balance in the lineup, we saw how much it hurt when we didn't have him. To have another left-handed bat who's a power bat and a high-on-base guy who can play both corner outfielders so that, you know what, yeah, maybe Yordan's going to play 110 games in the outfield. I don't think Yordan's going to play 140 games in the outfield. I got to have somebody who can play a corner outfield. Kyle Tucker needs a day off sometimes. You can have Tucker DH the days that he doesn't play the field. Having a guy like Conforto, where you're just rotating the bats around instead of this guy's got to sit, I think that makes a lot of difference. So, yeah, I would rather run the risk on Conforto than Brantley. I also think Conforto's tag is going to be $20 to $24 million, and Brantley's tag might be
per
tech. I think it'd be 1 year and about $20 million.
Ooh, yeah, I'm not willing to go that far.
And I think Brantley might be 1 year and $12 million.
Yeah, I think you're in 12 to 14 for Brantley, and I think that $6 million you save could be valuable for you. Yeah, I'm not. If that's what he's going to charge, what he's looking for on the open market for a 1 year deal, I don't think I'm willing to go that far.
30 home run hitter who gives you the high average and the high on base and the OBP and is a good fielder. That $20 million is a little bit of a discount. And obviously, look, he's coming off a season where he didn't play, so there's going to be a discount. Before he injured that shoulder, he was probably looking at something 5 years and $150 million. Then he got hurt. So I think 1 year and $20 million is a reasonable deal.
But that's where the Verlander deal factors back in.
Yes, it does.
It really depends on what you pay JV and how far you're willing to go with someone like that.
And that's why we decided to have that Verlander conversation first, because what they ultimately pay Verlander, how much of a trickle-down effect does it have on the other things that they can do? Can they afford a $20 to $25 million outfielder? And not that they can't afford it. I should say, are they willing to spend $20 to $25 million? Because they can afford it. They print money. They can afford it. But is the owner willing to pay the tax? Whereas if he's not, Michael Brantley return at a more reasonable number, comes a little more risk, but is a guy that you know and you trust. All right, coming up next, it's time to take a little drive down Bad Take Boulevard. This is the Killer Bees.